Welcome, friends, to the Someone Gets Me podcast. I am your host, Diane Allen, and I am so delighted that you're here. This podcast was created because I believe there is a visionary leader inside each one of us who is waiting to be seen. In each episode of Someone Gets Me, you will hear useful tips from successful visionaries who will share their stories about how being seen has allowed them to take their vision out into the world with action. Welcome, friends. It's Diane, and we're here at Someone Gets Me with an amazing person. You know, it's really fun on this podcast and in my online world where I get to meet people all over the place that I wouldn't otherwise get to know, but yet we have such a common synergy that it gives me goosebumps even thinking about it right now. So on today's show, I have this woman who's this great coach, but she's also an amazing author. She sent me her book prior to the show, and I've read it already. In fact, I read it every day, and I have added it into my daily routine. It's one of the most amazing and inspiring books. And you know, because I'm very picky about that, that there must be something special in it. We'll get to that later, though. So I have with me today, from Western New York in the United States, Barb Klein. She is an amazing coach, and she teaches people how to live a simple, more mindful, caring life for themselves. Apparently, there's a lot of women out there, y'all probably know who you are, that have difficulty taking care of yourself because we're often trained not to, and then we pay that negative price. Well, Barb is the answer to that situation because she is skilled in helping you care for yourself better and know really what you need in order to care for yourself better. Sometimes we don't even know what we need. So I can't wait to ask her all kinds of amazing questions about how she became so skilled at this. But what I'd like to do before I start in all the questions is invite Barb onto the show. Welcome, Barb.
Well, thank you. I am so happy to be here with you, Diane. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, this is going to be really fun because I have so many things I want to ask you about. But first, the first thing is I want to ask about a little bit about, tell us who you are, like where were you born? What kind of life do you have? Whatever you want to say doesn't matter, but give us like a little brief, who is Barb Klein? And then we'll get more into the technicalities of like the specifics.
Sure. So who is Barb Klein? Well, I was born here in Rochester, New York, and I strayed for a little bit, but made my way back. And baby of five children. Accident child, I guess, 10 years between me and my next sibling. And now I am the mom of two young men, who I'm sure we will talk about, if that's part of the story here, who are 26 and almost 21. And I am married to my college sweetheart, who is my soulmate. We've been together for 34 years now, and 2 years ago became empty nesters, bought a house on the lake here, and just finding a way to fulfill a childhood dream of mine. And 6 years ago, I started my own business, which is Inspired Possibility, doing the coaching, leading retreats for women, primarily, also for men a little bit. And I wrote the book, 111 Invitations, Step into the Full Richness of Life, that came out 3 years ago. So I guess I would say I started into my, well, I've always been on a personal inquiry, getting to know myself and personal growth and development. I think that's always been who I am, but particularly probably from the age of 40 on, when I kind of realized, you know, maybe there's more to life out there than just this, whatever just this is. And then particularly in the last 10 years, I've been walking some pretty hard paths, and alongside the hard paths, also starting a business, also writing a book. So that's really what I want to talk about today, is how it's possible to have both of those things coexisting at the same time, even though our minds can't make sense of it, because my mind certainly couldn't.
Right. Sometimes when there's all these different factors going on different levels, our cognitive self is a little too black and white to be able to get to it. But what's the childhood dream you just referenced that you want to fulfill? That's very interesting.
Living on a lake. Because we had a cottage when I was a younger girl. And from the time I was 10 till college, my mom and I had this place on one of the other Finger Lakes here. And I love being on the water. Water brings me peace and calm, and all I have to do is see a lake to just go, I'm home. So when my younger son graduated from high school, he signed a 12-month lease, even though he was going to community college. But that made it very clear to us that he was not intending to come back home again. So we were free to downsize massively. And I will say we did this in a way that I would never have expected, because I thought the dream was a 2,000 square foot house on the lake, which would have put us into a 30-year mortgage and lots of taxes and all of that. We actually ended up in a mobile home in a retirement community, which we're not really quite old enough to retire yet, but that's where we are. And that gives us the financial freedom and the flexibility to do the things that we love.
Oh, that's perfect. I absolutely love that. So you're a water person and you're a seeker. So in my world, in my reference point, you're not an accident baby at all. Your soul is really, really on purpose about coming here for a greater mission, because those are the signs of it. And so I hear that as like, what an amazing gift. And so our whole lives then are all about how that fulfillment is going to happen. Like, how is the vision that's like in us, that seed, actually going to germinate? And what are we going to do with it, if anything? Because we all know if we don't follow the vision, we end up physically, mentally, or emotionally ill eventually. So it's about following it. So you are doing that great work as a great seeker. So I don't hear accident baby at all. I hear divine purpose coming through, and your parents couldn't stop you.
I love that. Thank you. And I think, you know, when you say that, I will say part of my work definitely goes back to my mom as the traditional wife in those days. And me being intuitive, even at a very young age, to know that she was not honoring herself. When my parents got divorced when I was 12, I remember my father saying, "Don't try to change her. I've tried for 32 years. And I said, even at that age, I'm not trying to change her. I'm trying to let her know she's okay as she is. And that's what I'm doing with women today. So it was like, how did I know that then? But that's, you know, I do see that thread.
Oh yeah. So you came in with that message and that mission, and it's clear all the way from when you were young. And so was there ever a time when you were growing up where you didn't feel understood? Like, you know, you could see things other people couldn't see, or you saw the world differently and you looked around and like people weren't getting it?
I think so. I mean, I don't have any stories that come to mind, but I just recently read a book about called Blessed Are the Weird by Jacob Nordby. And that's what that's about. Like those of us who haven't felt like we fit in. So I would say yes, in ways that would be true.
And so you fell in love, when you fell in love with your college sweetheart, is your college sweetheart like, does he embrace your intuitive cool weirdness? That's really not weird, but you know, that the difference is in you. Like, he obviously knows about them, right?
Yes, he does. Yeah.
So how do you know?
He's amazing.
Is he intuitive too?
He is, although I don't know that he claims that, but he is, you know. And the one thing I will say is he absolutely has supported every dream I've had along the way. And even when we were dating in college, he gave me a book on horse care because he knew I wanted to own a horse all my life. And then when I was 25, we bought my first one, even though it made zero sense financially. So he goes along with my things.
Oh, that's
supports everything.
That's wonderful to have that kind of support. So now tell us a little bit about, as time's unfolded, and you said there's some things that you wanted to share about regarding your sons and things. Give us a little bit of how all these things are unfolding, because clearly you did not get to Inspired Possibilities and this amazing book by accident. So give us a little bit of backstory. What was the road leading up to all of these great inspirations that you're now bringing to the world?
So... that story really begins 10 years ago when I found out that my oldest son was addicted to marijuana. And, you know, it started in such an innocuous way with just finding his cell phone and messages about going to meet somebody at midnight. And, you know, nothing uncommon for many parents of teenagers. And I tell this story, like, on some level, I don't know if I knew how serious that was going to be for us or if I overreacted, but either way, you know, I felt my world falling apart in that moment. I felt like, am I going to be able to keep on working? Is my marriage going to last? I went through all the things of, well, I can save him. I can, you know, I went into full mama bear mode. I can take him to Peru for 3 months and get him clean. I can do. And of course I can't do. So it took me a while to figure that out. And I didn't even know about self-care in the beginning. So honestly, I don't know what I did for those first 5 years, because it's really only been 5 years that I've known about the self-care. Mm-hmm. I think I floundered. I felt very alone, because it isn't the kind of thing that you talk to people about. So the whole someone gets me, I didn't know who would get me. And I certainly didn't feel like I could turn to his school as we had for other things for the support. It's not the kind of thing that you talk about at the grocery store. It's not, you know, and when you do, people have that reaction that they don't really know what to say.
So you find yourself in a time where you're having this family crisis, and you look around and there's nobody who to really go to or talk to, or even really knowing where to start to find the people to know to go to or anything. That sounds very kind of lonely and scary to me.
Absolutely. And my go-to is books. So I always figure there's a book out there for something. And honestly, the only books that I found were kids who had died, kids who were in jail, kids who were on heroin. And it was like, that's not my son. This is just marijuana. I mean, it did escalate, and it has escalated over the next 10 years. But in the beginning, that's where we were. And yeah, I didn't know. I didn't know who to turn to or where to get help. But I knew, you know, obviously you get counseling, and we got counseling for him. We got counseling for us. We did the pieces that we could.
Right. And so if the counselor is not really skilled in addiction and codependency, which is in powerlessness, which is what you were experiencing, then that could also be another situation where your needs don't get fully met, because there's a lot of books about codependency, some of the best ones in the world. And you're a book person, but you didn't even know the name of the thing to go look for.
Right. And my focus was on him. It wasn't on me anyway.
Right. Because you didn't know that it mattered yet. Right. And I'm bringing that up, and I point that out because it's so very important, because I've worked in the industry of mental illness and substance abuse now for many decades. Mm-hmm. And I interview a lot of people about addiction, and I talk to people about the fact that you don't know when it's starting, how big of a deal it is. You just don't. It's like the frog in the water where, you know, they turn up the water slowly, that frog's going to cook, because it's just not in the radar, even with people who are in the know. And here you didn't have any reference point for it to even have a know to even look at. And that's a very, very difficult place to be, especially as a mom. So what happened? How did you handle it?
The best that I could. I think there was a lot of tearing my hair out. There were a lot of ugly times in the house, a lot of screaming and yelling. A lot of desperation. And we did thankfully find an addiction counselor. So at least we knew how serious it was. We had that level of support. We understood that it's a beast, and the more it's fed, the mm-hmm. stronger it's going to become. But I don't think when we were in it deeply, we really knew what to do. So I went through all of the things. We had to try counseling, inpatient, outpatient. And once all of those had not worked, and he was 18 and he was still in our home, and it was clear that this was not going to change, we got to the point where we said, you can't live here any longer. And that meant he was going to be homeless. That was a really hard, has been a really hard time. He's been primarily homeless since then.
That's so heavy. It's so
and
hard.
So, right. But along the way, somewhere, I guess 5 years ago, I landed on this self-care piece. And began to see myself as separate, to understand that I had a life to live regardless of what was going on there. Began to understand that us going down with him wasn't going to help anyone. And so starting to tease out those threads of, okay, you know, how do I continue to live a life? How do I continue to have a marriage? How do I have another son who needs attention and things? And create and thrive in the world alongside these explosions. And that's what it's felt like these landmines going off, but also at the same time, these magnificent things happening.
Right. It's like one of those things where it's like this cosmic joke, like, okay, we have a blow up over here, and we have a Ferris wheel over here, and we have a peaceful lake over here. And it's like, okay, manage this. It's a very interesting roller coaster ride.
Yeah.
So what are things that you do for your own self-care? What have you like kind of grown into now, you know, once you learned that there was self-care, of course, what are the things that you've grown into? Because being the mother of an active addict son is I think, probably one of the hardest things on the planet. It's harder to be in your shoes than his, much harder. Mm-hmm. And much harder because you're powerless over what he's doing. He has mm-hmm. power over what he's doing. You don't. And, mm-hmm. and you're his mom. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a big deal. So mm-hmm. What are the things that you've been using or that you've learned that really support Barb in all of this?
Meditation is one of my practices for sure. And I think through that, Tara Brach talks about cultivating the heart that can hold it all. And I feel like that's what this practice has been, you know, trying to allow myself to be where I am moment to moment. Mm-hmm. I have taken the one day at a time down to one moment at a time because there are a lot of moments in 24 hours and my world can shift radically from hour to hour. So really boiling it back down to, okay, in this moment, you know, and just grounding into here, what's happening right now in this mm-hmm. moment. I'm with my husband. We're at a concert. We're 2 hours away from home. Yes, my son's in an ambulance going to the hospital. It's not the first time this has happened. He's getting the help he needs. I'm going to enjoy my evening. Tomorrow we'll deal with that. But really having to boil it down to, okay, what's here right now? And as much as possible, not always possible, but you know, trying to avoid the mind jumping into the scary future. I've worried about him dying for 10 years. He hasn't. So I've also grown really, I mean, it's so important to understand that this is not where I started, but mm-hmm. gotten to the point where last year I actually said to my husband, you know, what if we stopped trying to save his life and we love him as he is for as long as he's here and just surrender and let go. And that doesn't mean don't stay involved in his life because we love him. The love has always been there, but remembering that we have choice and I think giving myself permission to let go of there's a right way or a wrong way to do this, mm-hmm. Because that can just pile on more of those labels that I really don't even like. it's what's called for in this moment and what am I okay with? What are mm-hmm. those boundaries? Dance in, dance out, step back, but don't label myself as wrong for doing that when I do. And then choosing us, choosing me, choosing to live the life. Finding breath, going to yoga, always because it brings you into the present moment. So right. To me, yoga is body, mind, heart, spirit right here. I have great teachers who help me to not be in the past or the future. That helps a lot. But it's not always the Zen thing either. Sometimes it's getting in the car and screaming, you know, like sometimes it's not appropriate to go all Zen on it. I've needed that release as well.
So it's being okay with being in the wherever you are, like you said. So when you were first discovering the whole idea of self-care, was it difficult for you to allow people to support you and help you?
Like
you
sure.
You know, because you said, a teacher said, help me right now. But I'm imagining that in the very beginning, that was probably really difficult.
Very difficult. And that's what I see with a lot of moms like me is we are strong women. We have muscled through so much. And we're probably putting off the vibe, I've got this. Because that's what happens. You armor up and I got it. I'm good. I don't need anything. Mm-hmm. So yes, I think there's a huge vulnerability in actually admitting that I needed help and that I couldn't do this alone.
Right. And that armor is just woven with denial, like that we even need help or that it's sure. self-care is a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so many women don't even know self-care is a thing.
And that it's okay.
Right.
You know, that's the other piece, like permission granted to take care of myself, permission mm-hmm. granted to have moments of joy and peace, because that's a real mental struggle at times. Is it okay for me to be happy? Is it okay for me to find peace? Is it okay for me to go on this trip or go to this concert when my child is struggling? So I really had to redefine love. I had to redefine motherhood and what a good mother is.
And what's okay. Yeah.
All right. Everything would say, it's your job to keep your child safe. And I couldn't keep him safe in my own home. So once you have that realization, it does help a little bit to let go.
Well, the number one thing with any self-respecting addict is right. They'll sit right in front of you and do what they want to do mm-hmm. as long as the disease is running them. But you know, one of the things that is coming to mind now listening to you is that one of the things that I'm really aware of in all my years of doing this work is that we have over 75% of our belief systems of how we're going to operate in our life by the time we're two. And by the time we're five, they're in there. And so you and your husband did everything you needed to do in the best way you could by then. And so the play out of what your son does or doesn't do, that's on him. Mm-hmm. And yes, it was important for you to keep your child safe when he was a young child. Mm-hmm. But now we have an adult here. Mm-hmm. And the rules are different when it's adult to adult, even though there's still a parent involved, right? And so there's a lot of those transitions of ways of looking at it, because he already has the skills he needs to be successful. You instilled them in him when he was young. Mm-hmm. Now it's up to mm-hmm. him whether he's going to use them or not, right? Mm-hmm. And that's still a tricky place to be as a parent, no matter what, no matter how much we understand it, it's hard.
Well, it is tricky. And I think it's particularly tricky when there's mental health involved, because then the questions arise of how much is choice versus how much is the illness at play. And
yep.
I think that's really important. And that's one of the things I want to bring to the forefront around all of this too, is that the kids that I see falling into this category I know they're out there, but the ones I am seeing and the ones I'm working with, the moms of, they're sensitive kids. They're not out there partying with a group. They're doing this alone to not feel and to not think what they're thinking. Mm-hmm. So finding a way to bring compassion to that at the same time that we're taking care of ourselves has been really, really important, because I think it's easy to stay in the anger. It's easy to stay in the blame. It's easy to be reactive. It's much harder to be in this place of, I love you. I don't understand this. I can't really support you. I am in your life and I am living my life, but yes. I'm not going to hate you, and I'm not going to blame you, and I'm not going to be angry at you.
There's so much charge in the anger. So to be in a place of love takes great courage. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you bring up the sensitive part, because first of all, mental illness is positively correlated with high intelligence. And my specialty is working with gifted people, high intelligence mm-hmm. people who have overexcitabilities, i.e. very sensitive. And I have a unique way that I work with them mm-hmm. that nobody else does. In fact, I was just contacted yesterday by two separate people asking me to write national type programming mm-hmm. because I'm the pioneer of that work. Mm-hmm. I never really thought I was the pioneer of it, Barb. That's just what I naturally knew, like my intuitively. I mean, I'm educated too, of course, but it's like, okay. And so here you're giving that same example, and people don't realize that some of the people who are tormented the most are the people who are highly sensitive, often intuitive and visionary. And if they're boys, they have it worse, because the culture says they're not allowed to have those things, and they do. Mm-hmm. And it is a whole different animal for how they cope with the world and what to do. And we live in a very difficult environment for a highly sensitive, empathic type intuitive person. Mm-hmm. And most of them either feel everything or nothing. And so once they find a substance, and pot's a good one, that will numb it or give me a little bit of relief from the pain of the overstimulation, mm-hmm. then they're off and running until they learn how to manage the overexcitability. Mm-hmm. And most people don't even have that discussion with them. You know, like professionals, they don't talk about that stuff much because they don't know, I guess. I don't know.
I'm so glad you do. That's good to know.
And it's sad. I clean up a lot of messes from people, but I'm glad I understand it. Mm-hmm. So when you have sensitive people, that means they're not falling far from the tree. That means that you're highly intuitive, empathic, and sensitive, which I know mm-hmm. that to be true. Mm-hmm. And so obviously the moms you're helping, their kids are sensitive, so then they must have some of the same abilities and may or may not know how to handle it or what to do, or that it's even a thing. Like, some people don't even realize that what's special about them is a gift. They don't even see, they just think everybody's like that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So give us a little idea of, like, when you're working with somebody, what are some of the things that you help them with, or how do you help them start going down the road in a productive manner? Because you had to find the road largely on your own. So, okay, now, thank God, you're stepping up as like a mentor with the torch, you know, the torchbearer. Yep. For yep. these women, like, you're the angel they've been praying for. And what are some things that you're doing with them to help them see, like, there's somebody listening to us right now who's listening to the two of us going, oh my God, you know, like, light bulb, light bulb, light bulb. Mm-hmm. And so what would you say to that person listening to us right now who's going, that's me, mm-hmm. that's me, mm-hmm. that to help them kind of take that first step on the road? What do you do?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you remember that you were a woman before you were even a mom. And that was like a light bulb moment for me, honestly, just in the past couple of weeks. It was like, okay, 20 years of my life, I wasn't even a mother. That's a majority of my life. And then 10 years of motherhood, none of this was going on. So gaining perspective on that and then going, okay, this is only one little thread. Like my husband uses the pie analogy, and he will say, you know, 7/8 of our pie is great. 1/8 kind of sucks. And it's like peppers on the pizza. It seeps into the rest of it. But 7/8 is really good. So you have to find that perspective. Gratitude is one of my biggest practices and one of the self-care tools I share with everybody. And there's tons of research for those who need it, that it really does rewire your brain and shifts the way that you are in the world. So we would start there. And when I do a retreat for the moms, we acknowledge the kids. We have a separate altar to name that thread, that that's what brought us together. But then I bring us back to us and, okay, what does your soul need? What does your spirit need? Who are you? And we start asking those questions. And very often the answer is, I don't even know anymore. Mm. And I understand that. You know, all I know is I'm this crazed mom who's been in this hurricane for, lots of times we say roller coaster, and I don't even like that analogy because I hate roller coasters. So the high part of that is not a high for me, right? Mm. So, not that I love hurricanes, but at least Brandi Carlile has a great song called The Eye. Mm. And she says, you can sit, you can dance in the hurricane, but only if you're standing in the eye. Mm-hmm. So it's all about finding a way to find our own center, regardless of what is spinning on around us. And when mm-hmm. we bump up against it, knowing that, you know, we might get pulled into it for a little while, but the more solid we are in ourselves, the more we can come back. I call it coming home to ourselves. And so it's getting to know ourselves, first of all, self-awareness, and then asking those questions of what do my body, mind, heart, and spirit need? How can I honor those, and making sure that there's simple little practices every day that honor that.
So what would be one gratitude practice that would be kind of simple that you could share right now for that person who's going, okay, I'll do the grateful thing, but I don't sure. even know what that is. Like, sure. where do I start? Like, they're listening to us and they're like, I don't know what that is.
I don't know what that means. That's fair. It can be super simple. You know, Oprah talks about gratitude journals. So you can have that. You can have a gratitude journal where you write down three things you're grateful for. You can do it in the morning. I love to have a morning practice that starts my day intentionally. So if you don't have time for anything more than this, wake up and before your feet hit the ground for the day, name three things you're grateful for. You don't even have to write them down, but just think to yourself, and it can be as simple as, I'm grateful that I woke up today. I'm grateful I have a comfortable bed, because sometimes you don't have to strive for the big things. Take the simple things that you take for granted and name them as well. I personally post an evening gratitude on Facebook every night. And it can be, I'm grateful for the tears I felt today. I'm grateful for letting myself be really angry. I'm grateful for the sunshine on the lake and how pretty it is. You know, it's whatever, and I don't do it for other people, but I know other people like it and they see it and it reminds them to be grateful too, because I hear that from them. But it's really, I guess, my own accountability just to make sure that I do it every day. So that's a simple way to do it.
That's really cool. And ever since we become friends on Facebook, I see those posts. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that's what you were doing. But mm-hmm. every time I see one, I'm like, oh, thank God there's another grateful person out there. Like, I am so sick of the negativity that whenever I see your name hooked to something, I'm like, oh, well, this is going to be uplifting. Mm-hmm. Because I really don't feed negativity into my brain as much as I possibly can, because to me that overwhelms my intuition and my empathness. So now that I know what you're doing, it's even cooler.
Yeah. Can I say one more thing about that? Because I see a lot of the time, well, we know Misery Loves Company. And so a lot of the groups that I do see for parents of kids with addiction, it is so easy to get into that place. And to go to the anger and the sorrow and everything that's wrong. And can you believe this? And can you believe that? And on retreat, the last retreat I led for moms, I said to them, I don't even want you to ask each other about your kids. Mm. And one of the moms had a really hard time with that. And she just said, well, I want to ask people about their lives. And I said, you can. They have a lot of life besides this one story thread. And so that's what it is. It's not denying it, but it's building that awareness that there's so much more to life than this one piece. You are not your pain.
You're not your pain. You're not your child.
Right.
You're not the agony.
And you don't have to answer that question, how are you, with, well, this is what's going on.
How are you is not a request for the daily rundown. Right. Yeah. So so your retreats for these women, I bet for a lot of people, are eye-opening, because in our culture, women aren't taught how to care about themselves. And some of the language even, or even the idea that if somebody says, how are you, you don't give the litany of the rundown of the kids. My grandmother used to call it the organ recital, where as she got older, and she said, how are you, to somebody, they would go, well, my back hurts, and my leg hurts, and my blood pressure's high, and my cholesterol's this. Yeah. And so she always called it the organ recital. And I have a friend of mine who's around my age, who, but her energy is more like being with my grandmother. It's just kind of interesting. And every time I say, how are you, I get the organ recital. I'm like, oh my God, my grandmother was right. You know, and there are people that their minds are stuck on, let's look at what's wrong with the world. And we're taught that in Western society. Mm-hmm. And so it's really helpful to help somebody say, okay, well, what's right here? Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot more right than wrong, because we're all sucking air, and we're in one piece, and we're here. So there's something going right.
Right. So there's a lot of unconditioning and unlearning that we have to do, whether I'm working with somebody one-on-one or in the retreat setting. And I'll say that, like, nobody ever taught you it's okay to take care of yourself. The only time they do is when they say, put on your oxygen mask first, which has, you know, woven its way into the self-care world. But if you break that down, really, that's only to help somebody else too. There's nothing out there that purely says, take care of you, because it is vital that you take care of you, that you build that foundation so that you have a ground to stand on for anything else you want to do in this world.
Yes, absolutely true. I tell everybody I work with, the only role that a parent has for their child is to be as healthy as they possibly can be, because all children, whether they're adults or not, need a healthy parent. And that's all they want, is their parents to be available and healthy and present, whatever that means. So parents are responsible for growing and developing and taking care of themselves so that they're as healthy as they possibly can be on every level for their children, whatever that means. The child, the only thing the parent wants for the child is the child to be happy. Mm-hmm. So it's the child's responsibility, adult child or not, to seek that kind of joy and happiness in a way that fulfills their soul and lives their vision. And so addiction comes when they avoid that, when they're avoiding their vision and avoiding following what their soul knows. And that's why they create misery. And they still need a really healthy parent. So if the parents aren't taking care of themselves, because they're too busy focusing on the kid or focusing anywhere, they usually become addicted to something else, like stress or anger or fear or anxiety or something, and doesn't serve anybody. So where did you get the name Inspired Possibility? I love that name. And listening to the conversation about the women who don't get it yet and how you had to find your road, I mean, I can only imagine how tricky it's been. I mean, because I've lived a lot of it too. And I know a lot of people, I've helped people for years with it. So I get it. But where'd you get Inspired Possibility? I love that name.
Thank you. I do too. So it started as Inspired Solutions, which I had for a few years. And then I really was like, I don't have anybody's solutions, so I don't like that. And I am intuitive. You've already named that. So Possibility dropped in and I'm like, that's it. I love it. And the Inspired piece, I think of Wayne Dyer talking about inspired and inspiration, and how it's when spirit gets a hold of you and takes you to an idea. You know, it's not you trying to force something. So there's definitely a spiritual component to this journey. And the people that I work with well understand this idea that we each have our own soul's journey, and that our kids have their own soul's journey. And that's a big, big part of all of this. Because when you recognize that, you free each other to live the life that you're here to live. And I don't need to understand why his life has gone the way it has. It's very interesting, because he has said, you know, I must have been kept alive for a reason, because I shouldn't be here. And it's true. It's totally, I believe he's died 4 times and been brought back. So we both know he also has a higher calling, and he's being kept alive for something. And I do believe he'll get to the other side of this and help a ton of people because of what he's been through. Just like, if I can take my pain and use that to help anybody, then that's the gift in it.
That absolutely is. Well, everything works together for the good. And so if your son was sitting here right now, I'd say, come on, let's unstick you and get your vision alive. Let it emerge and let's go for it, because that's where your freedom, peace, joy, salvation are, is letting your vision come out. And the addiction in him wouldn't like me very much, because once he started living the vision, he would change just like that, because he would awaken in a way that the addiction can't hold you, can't grab you. And so I want to say that to him. So you can tell him I said so.
I will. Definitely.
Okay. So the book that you wrote, 111, and 11 is my lucky number. So I love this spiritual number, Invitations to Step into Your Full Richness of Life. Mm-hmm. I have the book. You sent it to me. Where did that title come from?
Quite honestly, it also dropped in when I was getting a Thai massage at a retreat center. The book started as Garden of Inspiration, but I hit a moment where I knew that wasn't broad enough, that the book had to have space for the darkness and the light. So Garden of Inspiration was all sunshine and rainbows. That was not going to be it. So that title came to me. I had over 200 pieces written. And at that point, it was like, oh, great. I have a number. I know that's a really spiritual number. I love the invitations because I never wanted it to be about me. You'll see, I don't give you a lot of detail about any of the poems. Mm-hmm. And that's because they carry a universal message. I could read something that was my story of this journey with my son to my friend. And she's like, oh my gosh, that's my journey with breast cancer. So I didn't want to muddy it with too much of my own story, where people would say, well, I don't have that story, so I can't relate. And I'm finding, I have a client who says 100% of the time the book is accurate. I say 99, because, you know, I don't want to claim 100%, but 99% of the time people open this book randomly and they get exactly the message they need, as do I. And there's stuff in there I didn't even remember writing, because it came to me and through me. I mean, I can't even claim it.
That I'm laughing because I have 6 books out, and I can tell you that I've read some of them, some of the pieces of them. I go, I wrote that. Okay, great. This is really good. I really like this. And okay, well, I understand. And so here today, ever since I got it, I got the book the day I got back from my annual retreat, and I was all pumped up, and I'm like, oh, look, like, what's this thing in my mailbox? Because I had forgotten all about you saying you're going to send me the book. Mm-hmm. And I open, I'm like, oh, it's the book. And I just love the cover. And then I've been just opening and looking and reading. And today was the reflection on doubt. Mm. And doubt is, and you're right about how universal it is, because I'm reading the book and I didn't know any of your story, any of what you've shared. I didn't know any of it, but it fit everything. And the cool thing is it's fitting for my clients. Like, I had somebody walk in today to my office, and the first thing they started talking about was self-doubt. Now, about an hour later is when I read, earlier is when I read that. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, let me show you this book and let's discuss it. And so the questions you ask on that page, we discussed a little bit, and it kind of like started our session off, which I thought was really neat. Wow. And so that's how you know it has universal purpose and message. It's bigger than just one place. And so it's divine that you opened up and allowed it to come through the way it did. Absolutely divine. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love this book. I'm going to put a link to how to buy this book in the show notes.
Thank you.
So if you're listening to us and you can hear my voice right now, go to the show notes and click on the link and buy the book, The 111 Invitations. You will be glad you did. I get given a lot of books. People want me to endorse things and read things all the time. And I read most of it, and some of it I get halfway through and go, it's just not resonating with me. It's not that it's bad. It just doesn't. However, that has not happened with this book. Every single thing I've opened. And I love that it's a mixture of paragraph and questions and poetry, and it's all this beautiful blend. It's very, very well done. It really is inspiring. And I'm really glad that you put it out there in the world, and I'm glad I got to meet you too. So this is wonderful.
Thank you.
So when you look ahead from here to your world and the work you're doing in the world, what do you see?
Okay. I have been encouraged to claim this, because I really do. I see a movement. I see supporting moms across the world. I see moms rising together. I see changing the way that we look at addiction and the way that we look at the families who are living this. I see, I don't know, eventually probably getting into the systems. That feels way too overwhelming right now, but there's so many broken systems around this with mental health and the legal systems and the medical systems and the way that they don't understand. So I have a vision of breaking the silence, shattering the stigma, and speaking out about this, because for so long, I've kept quiet about it. And Brené Brown talks about, you know, how shame thrives on the silence. And even if I were visiting my son in treatment, this happened this past year. I was visiting him in another city and we were staying in an Airbnb. And of course the questions are, oh, your son's down here. What's he doing? And in the past I would have said something like, well, he's figuring his life out, you know? And I said, well, actually he's here in treatment, you know, he's in recovery. And I decided to go for it because I thought if he was there being treated for cancer, I would share that with you. And why should I hide this part of my life? And so this conversation with you is part of that, like speaking out, speaking up, and helping other people to know that they don't have to carry the story alone. So that's the big vision.
That is a great vision. And I want to invite you to not be concerned about the systems, because the only way that people who are suffering will be helped is by stepping out of a system that we know does not work. And so I used to be concerned about being in the system and trying to help within the system. And I was told yesterday by somebody who I helped his wife get sober 19 years ago. And he told me yesterday, he goes, Diane, you're successful in helping people despite the system, not because of it. And I never thought of it that way, but he's right. So I'm free. Even I'm in the middle of freeing myself from the idea that I have to step into a system that doesn't work and try to help it change. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to create another one over here that works. And then pretty soon as the one that works takes hold, then the other one will be antiquated and it'll take care of itself. That's the self-sorting part of the universe. I no longer have to give energy or story to what no longer serves. It's ridiculous. So
excellent.
Go for it. That's what I say. Go for it. Excellent. So I have a couple other questions. One is, what is your favorite food?
I thought you might ask me that. I've been listening enough to know. Having just come back from New Mexico, I have to say Mexican food. Guacamole with anything is, one of my friends calls it food of the gods, and I have to agree.
Oh, yes. My other favorite food of the gods is mango salsa, but, you know, yes.
Mm, okay.
Yes, it's very, very good. Yeah. And I know you've shared with me that you work with people online. So if you're listening to Barb right now and you're resonating with her story, then I suggest you go to the show notes and hit that contact for Barb that I will have in there for you and contact her, because she'll work with you and she'll show you the way and she'll help you out. Because if you're resonating with her, there's a reason. And I have a very strong belief. If I resonate with somebody, I follow up on developing the connection, because I never know where it's going to go. So that open-mindedness pays off. So if you're really loving what Barb is saying half as much as I am, because I'm like digging, listening to her, then you want to check her out in the show notes. And I'll also put her website and other contact information, how you can follow her on social media, in the show notes for you to be able to speak with her. So one last question, which if you've listened to my episode, so you know what it's going to be. And that is that if there was a billboard, you could put anything on it, anything in the whole world on it for everyone to see. Mm-hmm. What would it be?
Life is for living now. Don't wait.
Oh, that's perfect. Life is for living now. True. That gives me goosebumps. Beautiful. So we covered a lot. Is there anything that I've missed, or anything your heart is saying right now that you really want to make sure that you get out there?
I would love to read one of my poems if I could.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay. This is the last one that was written, and it was written on the day that I had committed to sending the manuscript off to the people who had said, yes, I'll do a cover endorsement for you. And my son texted me that morning while I was out on my walk in the canal getting grounded, and he said, can we talk? And I said, no, I'm focused. And then he texts, but I have a serious question. I said, okay, but later. And what my mama's heart heard was, do you love me? That was not the question. I'll get back to that. That's what I heard. And so as I walked home, I wrote this poem. And because it's 111, I had to pull something else out. And this one had to go in, and the book could not have been done without this poem.
Oh, wonderful.
And I probably will cry when I read it, but I am okay with that if you are.
Oh, yes. Authenticity is my number one thing.
Yeah. This is called I Have Always Loved You. From the moment I knew you existed, I have loved you in a way I didn't understand. When I felt you moving within me, our bond began. I didn't know who you were or where you were headed, but my love was unconditional and eternal even then. I've always loved you, even as we've grown apart, even when my words and touch no longer soothe your pain. I've loved you even when I couldn't hold you, even when I've lost you and you've lost me. I've loved you in my darkest hours when I've doubted myself and my ability to love, when I've had no idea how to help you. I've loved you as I've screamed at you, terrified of the world that had consumed you. I've loved you as I've cried out in despair, sobbing for someone to show me the way. I've loved you as I have seen past the fog, beneath the shadows, and into your heart, your spirit, where I have always seen and known your wisdom, your depth, your kindness, your love, and your promise. I've loved you when you cast me aside because for me to see you was unbearable. I've loved you through it all, and I will continue to love you into eternity.
I have tears in my eyes. That's absolutely beautiful.
Thank you. And he loves that poem too. Shared it with him. He's asked me to send it to him multiple times in multiple places. He says this book is his Bible. And I do. I love that part about, you know, seeing the goodness in there, because I do. Like, his essence is still good. Mm-hmm. It's still there. It's still who he is. And it's important to not forget that and get that lost. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would say that to all mamas. Don't forget that your child is still in there beneath the beast of addiction, the mental illness, whatever's going on.
Yeah, they're
not. His real question was, can I have a puppy?
There you go. The real question, can I have a puppy? I love it.
It had nothing to do with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that was absolutely beautiful. I'm really glad you shared that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So that was an excerpt from the book. Now yes. I know you're all going to go buy that book, because I love the book. I'm telling you. And Barb, thank you so much for being here and being so authentic and real. And more than being here on the show, thank you for the work you're doing and the people that you are impacting. And thank you for helping our world. There's so much suffering out there and you're bringing such a light. And now I'm getting all sentimental, but thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you. It's my calling.
It certainly is. You have been listening to Barb Klein from New York. She's an amazing woman, right? And so look her up, inspiredpossibility.com. And I will put all her contact information in the show notes, along with her full bio and the link for you to buy her book. If you're led, please contact her and work with her so your life can be even more magical and amazing than you can believe. And thank you for being on the show, Barb. And thank you for listening to Someone Gets Me. So all of you in the sound of my voice, remember to keep your face to the sun so the shadows fall behind you. You are a rock star and you're here on purpose with a purpose. So let's all go out there and make some noise. Until the next episode of Someone Gets Me, be well.
Thank you for listening. I trust you gained some valuable inspiration and information. Please join me and other visionaries in the Someone Gets Me Facebook group. Or for more information on my services and additional episodes, visit SomeoneGetsMe.com. Again, thanks for listening.